Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie.
Hello, dear friends of great music and great musicians. This is Tom Schulz speaking. Welcome to the Elbphilharmonie Talk. My guest in this episode of our podcast series was Caroline Shaw. Caroline Shaw is an American composer, singer, songwriter, and violinist. She came to Hamburg in mid-May as a guest of International Music Fest Hamburg, and she was invited, I think mainly because, I mean, for one, she's a great artist, and for the other reason was that she had just released a record called Let the Soil Play Its Simple Part. And Music Fest Hamburg had a motto this year. It was nature, and what could be more natural than have the soil play its simple part in any given creation? We spoke about this title, about the importance of nature, about the importance of history, of roots, of the past of any individual artist. We also spoke, of course, about her collaboration with So Percussion, with this Brooklyn-based percussion quartet with whom she had made the records, Let the Soil Play Its Simple Part. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Caroline Shaw, so wonderful to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I have just heard you rehearse in one of our basement studios, and it was quite impressive. It was you and Soul Percussion, and it sounded like an entire band with keyboards and vibraphone and drum sets and you singing. And you also kind of promote this as a band, not, you know, being Soul Percussion interpreting your compositions, but it's a mutual give and take and contributing to your material. How does it feel to be the leader of a band, if there is such a thing as a leader in this format?
I certainly am not the leader of the band. I think that's one of the goals of the group, is that we kind of dissolve the sense of someone leading and others following. And the kind of origin of this project was that I had previously written a piece for the group called Narrow Sea, and, you know, where I'm the proper composer and kind of chief designer of the music. And I wanted to make something where we all can come to the room with our own creativity and desires and interests, and what would come out of that if we worked in the studio like other bands do. So I'm sure you already talked to them about this, but we decided to spend several days in a studio and bring in, you know, maybe pieces of things we're thinking about and see what comes out of it.
And the result is Let the Soil Play Its Part. This recording, which is very beautiful and very unique, I find, in its subtleties and directness and mysteries and surprises it holds. And the lyrics for this are yours, or have you used some sources that would inspire you to write music for with these guys?
Some lyrics emerged while we were in the room, and some were kind of fragments of James Joyce, the Irish writer from Ulysses, where his language is already quite musical, and I wanted to kind of further fragment that and, you know, use repetition and kind of a kaleidoscopic approach to his words. There's a song that uses the lyrics from an old American hymn. There's another that is the...
Which one is this?
That's the first one, To the Sky. So fades the lovely blooming flower. So that one's nice because it has already a rhyme and lyricism and lilt and rhythm of singing. And we just sort of, you know, I created a different melody with it. There's one song called Gradual Dazzle, which is a poem by Anne Carson called A Room in Brooklyn. And she goes in a lot of different directions in her writing, of course, kind of dances among different genres. This particular poem is almost one word per line, so there's a lot of space in that. There's a song called Other Song, which I had actually written before, and we kind of created a new adaptation of that.
I wanted to talk to you also about Other Song, because I just saw the video of it, and I found it utterly interesting and beautiful and striking in a way. The video shows people farming in a very original way, I would say, without using any machinery other than their own feet and their hands. And they are planting. They are planting little plants. And I don't know where that was shot. It looks somewhere, it's, I don't know, in the southern states maybe, or in Africa or somewhere. And there is this beautiful combination of what the hands of the musicians do when they play and what the land workers, the farmers do when they work the earth. And it's very simple, but it's very poignant, I find. Who came up with that idea? Was it just the visual person who did the video? Or did you have an idea in mind, like, let's bring this together in a way? Because it's also very contemporary and very acute, I find, you know?
Yeah.
Speaking about how we treat land, how we, yeah, how we have to reconnect to the mother earth, so to speak.
Yeah. There was a video directed by Maureen Towey, who's a director who lives in New York. And she and I were talking about just the, I wanted something that does show this connection to the earth and to the soil and to growth and people working together, and that feels really positive. So there's a farm, actually in upstate New York, it's about 2 hours north of New York City, called Rise and Root Farm. It's a very small farm, but it's owned by three women. And it has a very community feel. So those three women who own it are in the video.
Yeah.
And they're sort of remarkable people. So it was a just great combination of their project and the song. Yeah.
And they do this deliberately without machinery because they just decided to do so, or did they just leave it all out for the video?
I think they do all of it without machinery. They may use it for some, but the individual planting of things, I think they were just doing what they were doing, and Maureen said, can I film you today?
Okay.
There was no real particular plan or choreography of any of that.
What did they say to the result then?
They must have seen it. I think they've seen it. I think they liked it. I haven't spoken with them.
You should go to
the
screening with them, you know, just show them how, because it gets so, it's such a lovely way of really bringing those two quite remote worlds together in a striking way that you find, yeah, that's an organic, almost like kneading a dough or something, you know?
And Maureen really wanted to show the connection with the hands.
Yeah.
Doing, you know, sort of the labor of playing percussion or making the music, and the labor of planting something and all of the details of that.
It does get very humane for the viewer, at least. I found that very, very sweet. Yeah. And also kind of telling for the vibe of the album, you know, the respect for working the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Let the soil play its simple part.
Yeah.
Which would mean to just give it time for things to grow.
And embracing everything that has gone into the soil or whatever has been in there from the past. If there's, you know, compost, older things from last year, from years ago, all those things have decomposed and become part of this material from which something new can grow. Yeah.
So we're also talking transformation here.
Yeah.
We're talking about things that shift and change and can be usable again after a certain time.
Transformation and also a resolution to let things be what they are. And for me, the real metaphor, I think I wrote that title song really completely in the studio, and I wrote all the words in about 20 minutes.
Wow.
Just came right out. But I was looking around and saying, you know, I wanted to make a project where if you let everyone be who they are in the room, let all the parts of the soil, all of the creativity in this studio, let everyone play their simple part and let something new grow out of it, rather than saying, oh, it must be this, it must be that. Yeah.
Rather than preconceptions, trusting. That has a lot to do with trust, doesn't it?
Yeah. And understanding we also, every musician has their own memories and experiences that they come with decades of that. And those are a part of what goes in. We have all our own compost, all our own soils and things that are decomposed and that are still remaining that feed what comes next.
Yeah, history changing and, of course, being there. I mean, informing what we do, mm-hmm. also artistically. And I mean, you have begun so early with your compositions. Like, where were you, 13 or so, when you started composing? And you still kind of refrain from saying, I'm a composer, I'm a musician who composes music.
Mm-hmm.
But then you must have heard something and must have heard a lot in order to come to where you are now with your musical language. Mm-hmm. Would you say that there is something like a musical language that you have developed over time, or is this such a progress that wouldn't deserve that name yet?
It's funny, now I'm too close to the music to really be able to speak about it. I think composers are often the worst people to talk about their own music because we have some idea of it. I don't notice the patterns, but then I've had friends and especially younger musicians say like, oh yeah, that sounds like your music. How do you know? I love a lot of music and I love a lot of older music and I allow that to be part of what I do. A lot of older chord progressions, you know, from the 17th century, and those kinds of voicings are things that move me really deeply. And I sort of start from that place. And then you imagine, you know, of course, you don't want it to sound, what if that fell apart and came back together again and then did this and went on this path and then came back to something? What would that sound like? Sort of always asking the question of what is something, you know, music or a sound that I've never heard before, that's never been heard before, but that has always existed. Like, it just feels so familiar. I really like when someone says, like, I really feel like I've heard that before. It's like, yeah, actually, that's important to me, is to this sense of a familiar language, but it doesn't do quite what you're expecting. Yeah.
I don't want to overemphasize on this soil thing, but I feel it has also something to do with that, you know, this fertile ground, you know, produces different plants that you might even be surprised yourself to see, oh, this is coming up here.
Yeah.
But apparently the fertility is there and it's being informed by all kinds of things. And of course, the more specific ingredients you give into that soil, the more it'll be something of your own mm-hmm. imagination and creativity coming out. Mm-hmm. I find that beautiful. And of course, I can hear that in the piece you got the Pulitzer Prize for. Was it the Pulitzer Prize?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were 30 years old, and this is a vocal piece in four movements. And it's the form in itself already is ancient.
Yeah.
I mean, Allemande Courante, Sarabande, that stuff. You know, the sweet structure. And then you bring in all kinds of vocal techniques, of speaking, of a way of communication in a broader sense, I find. Mm. And of course, I was always thinking, is there a Meredith Monk hint here or something there, you know? Maybe there is,
yeah.
You know, together with all the older music. Is there anything there where you would say, this has really informed me more than others?
Mm. I think there are many different, you know, sort of techniques that we've been playing with in the room as singers. And I'm really interested in the edges of language, the things that we say to each other between the words, or when you sit on a consonant, or you shape a sound, or you shape the melody of what you're saying in such a particular way, and all the colors that go into that, how subtle it is, but how communicative it is. And kind of tapping into that is really interesting to me, combined with just the shape, the sound of the chords of Monteverdi Vespers or Talis or Bird. Like those guys were just, it was really the beginning of writing music down for other people. And they like, what if you had this big open fifth and then a third on top, and like just the richness of that chord. And then playing again with like chaos and order, things falling apart, and then cinching in and feeling like there's a pulse kind of going in and out of that, in and out of things that you know and don't know.
Yeah, this is so beautiful because you can feel this, what you're saying about Monteverdi and this old stuff. And it's not a clash, it's a collusion kind of way of how these things blend, you know, the way you treat the voices and it's also very respectful, I find, respectful towards the interpreters, respect the musicians and the singers, and respectful towards the past again. So it's a beautiful, quite unique way, I find. And I wondered, you know, getting this super prestigious award when you were 30, how did that feel? Did that feel like, oh, couldn't that have waited for another 20 years or so? I mean, Duke Ellington allegedly said when they refrained from giving him the award when he was already over 60. He said, "Oh, I'm still too young to merit this." You know? I was just okay. And you get it with 30, the youngest ever. So
I remember the day that happened. It looked like today. It was a beautiful sunny day, and I was outside and didn't expect it. And I remember thinking, "Okay, Caroline, you feet on the ground. You have to work now." Like, people will say, "Oh, isn't that great? Isn't that cool? Isn't there a lot of pressure?" I said, "No, I can't. None of those things matter. It's like, what is possible now? How keep working? Ask the right questions, and remember what's important. Remember always." I wrote that piece. It was part of a work. I mean, I was just one of the singers in the group. No one asked me to write it. It wasn't
Mouthful
a commission, but Roomful of Teeth. And I was an alto, and I just wanted to try things. I was like, I've never heard this before. What if we did this, and then what if it did that? And I stitched together the form that felt like exciting to me, and that I think should be. That I always encourage, you know, musicians of all kinds to say you can. It's not like some people can write music and some people can't. I think we all made music up when we were kids. And if there's something that you want to try to do, ask those questions and see if it, you know, go for it and try it. If it comes from a place of love and curiosity, I think it's really interesting. So, no, I just decided early on when that prize happened and I was 30, I said, there's no pressure. There's no such thing as pressure. It's really about what you do and what you make and what you give. And it's not about doing something important or complicated. It's about doing something that is a gift for you, for other people, and a gift for yourself, and maybe makes your short time on this earth a little bit more beautiful, or is just a way to pass the time. Yeah.
Have you always been this way? To me, you feel as if this is a very continuous personality I'm talking to, who has been this way, like from early on. Like, wouldn't have to train herself to be certain ways in order to be a better person or so. But
thank you. I think I joke with some friends, it's like, I'm actually quite morbid.
Oh.
And it makes me, I think, not really, but I enjoy thinking about the brevity of the time that we
Maybe
have.
Maybe that's key to it.
And that's, I think I'm convinced that if the world would look really different, if we all thought about that, how much we share with each other and how little time we have here and how we would relate to each other differently, whether it's on the street, it's on the train, or it's one country to another. So I know that's a very big thing to say, but it is what does inform what I do, I hope. And it's a really nice way to think about moving through the world and moving through music.
Yeah, there's a humility towards life and its preciousness. Mm-hmm. That's also being expressed non-verbally between the lines of what comes out musically when you play your songs and when I hear that music. And I'm just reminded of you playing for people who were about to die. You know, your father was a pulmonologist, right? Is that correct? Mm-hmm. So and he had to do with patients who were terminally ill, and you volunteered to play violin for them just a couple of days, or maybe the day they passed away. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense for me if you say you are morbid, but it's
in the most uplifting way.
Yeah, in the most uplifting way, because it's just giving so much comfort, probably, and the music getting so utterly fine. I think, you know, like a thread mingling with the soul that's departing, and there is something very, very delicate with it. And this seems to never have left you.
I'm sure there are times when I am less poetic.
Especially in the next 2 months when you go clubbing. I mean, you'll have
I know. I've got to.
You have some work to do. Some dance. Yeah.
Yeah.
How is it with violin playing now? I mean, this is an instrument that demands vigorous training pretty much every day. Mm-hmm. Are you still really playing on the level you wish it to be, or don't you have the time anymore to do that?
You know, it's funny. I never enjoyed practicing.
Oh, welcome to the club.
But luckily, my mom was a violin teacher, and she, I was two when I started, and with Suzuki method, mm-hmm. which is really the sort of core of the method, is that all children are talented and anyone can learn to play the violin, and you sort of learn it the way you learn a language. And mm-hmm. I will always believe that what we're doing now, talking, is infinitely more complex than playing the violin. The subtleties and the combinations of things that we do with our mouth just to get language out. So anyway, violin is very second nature to me. I used to be able to play Paganini and Bach and, you know, Mendelssohn concerto, and I don't need to do any of that anymore, so I don't practice it. But I still, every so often, will sit down and sight read quartets with friends. I can still do that. I really love that. That's my love. And I wrote a violin concerto a few years ago. Occasionally, I still play that. But I also love, I play in a, actually, I just did a piece, I was going to tell you, in Bremen, about a week ago, with a dancer, and it's the cousin of Wet the Soil, Play It Simple part. It's called Graveyards and Gardens. You would have loved it. I play that little bit of violin and viola in that. But it's something that I love very much. It was sort of my vehicle into music, and it's still probably the most natural thing that I do. I can pick it up, but I have no need to play the really complicated, difficult things anymore. But interestingly, I think I've become a much better violinist over the last 10 years because I understand the violin now much more through the voice, and mm-hmm. appreciating the edges and the imperfections of it and the expressiveness of that. Yeah.
And how did you get the harmony going? Because, I mean, the violin is a melody instrument, the voice is a melody instrument. Mm. Here, if you study music, you have to play piano in order to get in a sense, and I think it will be the same in the US. Did you enjoy this?
Yeah. I played piano I took lessons for a while. I hated practicing again. But I always write at the piano, and I can, I'll play a little bit in the show tomorrow.
Nice.
I love harmony and just the feel of certain chords. I think Schubert is probably the shape of Schubert is deeply, deeply in my hands and in my voice too. So
that's a very good reference. I mean, you can never go wrong with Schubert and piano and singing and just.
I missed the Ian Bostrich concert last night. But yeah.
Yesterday, I was in the recital hall of our other hall, Leishalle, and Patricia Kopaczynskaya was playing with some members of Mahler Chamber Orchestra, and they were doing the Adagio of Schubert's. You know, with the two cellos, and it was so beautiful. So, yeah, again, humble, I would say.
Yeah.
Very tender. Mm. And she's also big time into environmental subjects and topics. She will do a concert tonight, which is called Les Adieux. And you know, there is this Beethoven piano sonata called Les Adieux, but she uses this at a goodbye, a farewell to creation as we knew it, by playing Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, Pastorale, you know, the countryside symphony of Beethoven's with the bird songs in it and mimicking Pagan's dance and stuff. And she combines it with other music, partly contemporary, partly Schumann violin concerto. And the whole thing is being, you know, in parallel, there's a projection of where we are right now in Earth with extinction. And she's really, you could go there tonight if you want.
Yeah,
I think it's worth going, and it's quite impressive. And just thinking of Schubert, that just brought that to my mind. And the amount of concerts that are just taking place in these days and in our two halls is just Bostrich with Papano, he was playing, right?
Winterreise
even, mm-hmm. so quite. And we would have had Brad Mehldau play, you know, also yesterday. And it's Music Fest Hamburg, so there's quite something happening.
I looked at the list. I was like, every single night, every single day is something extraordinary.
Yeah. And right in these days, I find it gets to the crossroads of, you know, how nature would be perceived 2-3 centuries ago at Beethoven time, still quite innocently loving, you know, I'm going out of the city, I'm going up country, and everything is cool. Mm. And now we're just afraid of climate change and how everything is endangered. And this is like an intersection these days.
Mm.
And to some extent, maybe also your music speaks to this part in us that's trying to maybe not say goodbye forever, but gets more of a consciousness of where we are in terms of our creation these times.
What will you do today? Also, I think I had to recognize sometimes in, you know, thinking and writing about if nature is a part of my work, but I'm realizing that there are many people who don't have access to it, whether they live in cities, and I also live in New York City, but you find bits of it where you can. I'm just thinking, yesterday we went, had dinner at this, I don't know, it was a place nearby, it was like a crepe restaurant, and we were sitting outside, and there's a canal, and there's a window, like a little box of flowers kind of hanging off the pier, and inside was this duck that was sitting on her eggs, and she was like 2 feet away from me. And she would just
breeding.
Sit there, just breeding, in the middle of the city. I just loved that. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is really beautiful. Yeah. I'm so glad to be here.
But how do you make up then in New York? I mean, do you go to the park or where do you go if you need nature? Or do you go upstate or somewhere, someplace else?
Yeah, I think you have to, the Central Park is really great. I travel a lot too, so I'm not home that much. I used to have a little garden on my fire escape, which I've been gone too much, so I don't have that, but. You have your plants.
In flower pots.
In flower pots, yeah, or little boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a tree hugger?
I'm a tree hugger. I think there are people who are great stewards of the trees that are true tree huggers. Obviously, I love them. There's a beautiful novel by Richard Powers called The Overstory. It's really beautiful. It's he sort of weaves together several different narratives of different characters all revolving around trees in some way, and towards the end they all intersect, but it's some of the most beautiful writing I think in fiction about trees. I really love it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
What other literature are you recommending when it comes to our contemporary relation to nature?
There is a book that I'm listening to. What is her name? Robin Kimmerer, I think. It's about moss. It's just a book about moss, but it's also her own personal reflection. But
moss, like the green moss in the woods, covering trees
and all the.
Wow.
There's so many different kinds, and it's like basically the resilience of this small, low to the ground plant. It can get through so much, and it also feeds so much around it. It's such an important part.
Yeah,
that's really lovely. I don't read a lot of fiction, but I do like nonfiction. So.
We use that term, we write music. Do you actually really write music, or is it more a recording process or a communication process? Is it old-fashioned? Or do you use computer scores? How are you working?
I barely use pencil and paper. I might just jot some things down. Because I travel a lot, I've just sort of taught myself to keep everything within the computer. But a lot of it's just sort of an upgraded version of pencil and paper. It's a program called Sibelius. So all the same dots and lines that we've been using for hundreds of years, they're not any different. But at least now I can quickly edit and store them. And what I like about the computer is that I think it allows you to not be too precious about an idea. I can get something, can try something out, quickly kind of sketch it, and then not feel like, oh, look at all this. I've made this look so good. I have to keep it. It's like, no, I just save it in another file, move on, delete it, move it, sketch, stretch it around. And I try to use the software as quickly as I can so that the ideas can come out really quick. Get as fast as possible.
And then do you need to hear that somehow? Do you have like virtual instruments playing that back to you, what you are inventing?
Yeah, I think I'm doing a piece for orchestra right now. It's really useful
for
that.
Your first opera, right? So, opera, or is this already done?
Oh, this is opera. I just turned in the piano, the second draft of the piano sketch. So it's still in short piano form. I moved on to the orchestra piece, which is a totally different thing. There's a string quartet and a choir thing. So, I mean, most of this all is pretty traditional notation. I sort of started thinking of, like, I don't really know what one thing that I do, but I put on different hats. So today, after this interview, I'll go back to my engineering hat. Writing for orchestra is an entirely different beast where you can't, there's no, you know, sort of, there's not a lot of freedom in it. You have to, they have such a little rehearsal time that you have to have everything really in order. And make sure that it stands up. It's like constructing a building. You have to make sure all of the beams don't break and things support, everything's in place so that everything works, which is really fun. It's actually a fun challenge, but it's entirely different from, say, I'm also scoring a TV show. They're mad at me right now because I need to send that in, but that's all just recording. So I'm just recording in the computer a lot of my violin and voice, and that's, nothing is written down. So it's an entirely different process.
But then orchestration involves brass and woodwinds and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Two or three of everything. Strings, harp, piano, just a couple of percussionists. Yeah. Say eight singers too. Oh yeah. Ooh. Room full of teeth.
And do you hear all this internally and know, just, it's just a matter of bringing it somehow in order so that it works together? Or do you really know? Now, this orchestra does have three clarinets and I have to give them something to work on, or?
Yeah. Sometimes I think, I only need two, but there's a third one. Okay. Well, let me, I look through their parts. So like of the part of the second clarinet, it's like, are they bored? Okay. Let me give them something else. But it feels like I kind of sketch out the raw idea, the basic, you know, for every movement, I know what I kind of want it to do. And then I sketch out the harmonies. Harmonies so important to me. And those are the big pillars. And then I figure out what's the material. What do the walls look like? What's the surface? What's the color? And then you're just like coloring a picture. It's like you've designed all the shapes, but you're just fine tuning everything. And that's a really fun process.
Yeah,
but as long as the building stands up, you got to make sure the building stands up, and then.
Yeah, because then changing pillars here and there can get tricky, I mm-hmm. imagine.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes maybe it's necessary.
Oh, yeah. If it's necessary, I did that last night. It's like, you know what? This has to change. I, you know, save a new file.
All right.
Yeah.
And it's not that you want to wait for the orchestra to tell you, listen, this is not going to work. It's better to do that beforehand. Right?
Yeah, you just save a little time and makes everyone happier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Caroline, thank you so much for taking this time, and I'll just give you your time to take your engineering hat on for the remaining hours of this day.
Thank you.
Looking forward to the concert tomorrow.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, nice to meet you. Bye.
Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie. Dieser Podcast wird vermarktet durch die Podcastbude.